Today's broadcast is sponsored by Parkside Student Residence. With state-of-the-art accommodations and amenities and located steps from campus, you'll feel right at home. Visit live-parkside.ca to apply today.
Hello, Ryerson, and welcome to the third episode of Ryersonian This Week. I'm Sawyer Bogdan.
And I'm Rachel Arhin. We're here to bring you all the news you need to know.
We had some great stories this week, but let's discuss a couple that stood out. Did you hear that O'Keefe House is closing? It's Ryerson's oldest res building.
Yeah, I did. It's kind of crazy, but I'm not too surprised considering it only catered to 33 students.
That's very true. And when Melissa Verge spoke to the director of housing, he said that the reason that it was kept open for so long is because Ryerson doesn't have enough res buildings. But that's going to be changing when the new building that they're doing on Jarvis Street is finished.
Well, it's smarter, right? Like, Ryerson's an infrastructure and you have to keep moving forward in the future. And he was also saying that O'Keefe costs more to run than it brings in money, right? So at the end of the day, you're going to have to think about saving money for the school and putting it to other things that would be more valuable. I'm not too surprised.
It didn't make sense anymore to have it open, especially when the new building on Jarvis Street is going to have 30 floors and can have 593 rooms, which I think is really going to help Ryerson with their space issues.
I think it's a good decision on their part. So goodbye, O'Keefe. We'll miss you.
So long.
So 18-month-old Lucas Warren made history on Wednesday. He's actually the first child with Down syndrome to become Gerber's spokesbaby of the year.
Wow, I think that's a really big moment for just like the modeling industry in general, because one in 700 babies has Down syndrome. So I think it's very common to see kids with it, but you don't see them portrayed in media as much as they should be.
And I think that's essential that they made that new decision, because now this really represents that every baby is a Gerber baby, right? Whether you suffer from different, like a mental illness, or whether you suffer from some disease or whatever, babies are babies, right? So I like this step forward into the future in representing different type of people.
I agree. And it's not the first time. I think we're seeing the modeling industry take a step away from their cookie cutter images on what people should look like. You're seeing it with Ashley Graham now, the plus size supermodel. She's getting a lot of attention and showing people that women have more than just one body shape.
Yeah, well, we even saw that with America's Next Top Model, Winnie Harlow, because she suffers from vitiligo as well, but is an extremely popular model and in high demand right now in the modeling industry as well. So it's kind of nice to see that change.
I think it is time for them to be taking a step away from the norm. And I'm so excited for this. The Spice Girls are making a comeback.
They were a huge group in the 1990s. I know they were a big part of my childhood and all my older siblings. I'm sure yours as well.
Yeah, I remember when I was little just sitting there with my friends and just like singing Spice Girls nonstop. I think I drove my parents crazy.
So TMZ reported that they met last week, the group and their former manager, Simon Fuller. And in that discussion, they talked about going on tour in the UK and eventually coming to the US. Even though it's not coming to Canada, maybe we could take a road trip. I don't know.
I think I might just have to. They do say, though, that Victoria Beckham was the last to get on board with this. So, I mean, it almost didn't happen.
I'm not that surprised. She's married to David Beckham. She's doing her own thing. She's got her money. But nothing's going to ever compare to the Spice Girls. So I'm glad they came to a decision on that.
That's very true.
Coming up next this week, Ryerson video producer Kayla Paxo wrote about her experience in coming out as a bisexual. She joins us in studio to talk about this experience. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Kayla, in your article, you say at the age of 14, you started to realize you had romantic feelings for women in addition to men. Can you describe your feelings and emotions during this time?
It was really confusing for me because growing up in a community where there weren't a lot of people that were out, if at all, gay or bisexual. So I didn't really know what it was like or what feelings I would have towards a female and a male. Like, I didn't know that was possible. So it was just really confusing. And I remember making sure to always talk about boys because I was always afraid that people were going to catch on that I was looking and interested in girls. And it was just very confusing. And I was very emotional, but I wouldn't show how emotional I was because I was always afraid that someone was going to be like, oh, wow, like, is she into girls? Like, what's going on? So, yeah, it was...
Right, so... When you finally came out to your family and friends, I'm guessing it was a relief.
Yeah, it was like the biggest relief I've ever had in my entire life.
Okay, that makes sense. And now, in doing so, I'm sure there were many people that were supportive, but did you have any negative experiences in terms of coming out?
I actually had a friend in high school who I was really good friends with, and the beginning of university we had a falling out. And I realized it had nothing to do with me coming out as bisexual, but as time went on and I thought more about the relationship, I realized that there are a lot of times after the entire process of me coming out that I realized our relationship changed in terms of she would be more hesitant about me coming over or having sleepovers, because at that time, that's what you would do, right? You would go over to a friend's house, you would have a sleepover, you would play video games, like you would do all this stuff. And I felt like looking back now, I realized that she wasn't so much saying no, but there was a clear hesitance to her always being like, hey, like come sleep over, hey, let's hang out. And I don't know exactly if that's because I came out as bisexual and she was uncomfortable, or it was just our relationship falling out in general, that I don't think I'll ever know. But yeah, there were definitely clear like little signs that something was different.
I guess you were able to deal with that because you were comfortable with yourself at this point, right? So, and you talked more about the dangers, you called it, of coming out when you're not ready. Personally, what do you think those are?
For me, like my experience was very good. I had a really good experience where I didn't have any family like kind of disown me or say like get out of my house or something like that. But I do know people who have had very, very traumatic experiences where their parents kick them out of their house because they don't want that in their house, or they're not allowed to show any type of that part of their life to their parents. And just the dangers of coming out is you never know how someone is going to react. No matter how well you know the person, it's something that unfortunately is still looked at so badly that you have to be careful on who you come out to and the timing, because a lot of people are going to react differently. I was lucky where my family and my friends all had a very positive reaction. But like I said, I do know people who have had very traumatic experiences.
Kayla, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's all the time we have today, so thanks again for being
here. Awesome, thank you.
For students looking for a new cheap spot to grab a quick bite to eat at lunch or a beer after class, the people who brought you L Furniture Warehouse have opened up a new restaurant on Yonge Street. Trevor Hewitt has the story.
Ryerson students, if you love cheap food, then listen up. The people behind the popular Toronto bar chain L Furniture Warehouse have a new location on Yonge Street, right across from the SLC. When we spoke to owner Archie Aline, he told us after Warehouse heard the location was available, the team did everything it could to nab the spot.
Yonge and Dundas, busiest intersection in Canada. It's a no-brainer. So we got our sights set on it, and we were determined to get it. Took some work, we got it, and 9 months later, here we are.
Aline says that, despite a busy first week, staff has really stepped up to the challenge.
We all came together. A lot of people don't know each other, but we did about a week of solid training, got everybody in the same room. I'm amazed at how well everybody's clicking. Everybody loves each other. And it's been great so far.
We spoke to students on campus who said they felt the location was perfect for Ryerson students looking for a cheap new spot for lunch.
I think it's a good idea because it's cheap, it's quick, it's literally just across the street now. No need to go all the way to down the road over there. Generally speaking, yeah, this would be like probably the new go-to place.
Students also say they've heard about the cheap food the warehouse offers.
I heard good things about it from friends. My friend actually told me I should go there. It's like a good portion of food for like a decent price.
According to Aline, if you're looking for a cheap meal, the warehouse is the spot for you.
We have a $5.95 food menu all day, every day. It's the best value in the city. Can't be beat. Not tapas style. Full portions, huge portions.
But he says the location offers much more than just cheap eats.
Unlike anywhere else I can think of, we offer a DJ 7 nights a week, 365 days a year, not on one floor, but on two floors. So people come here for the food, but they stay for the atmosphere. They stay because we create a vibe and an energy that is welcoming for everybody, no matter who you are.
If you're looking to check out the space, it's open from 11 a.m. till 2 a.m. every day at 336 Yonge Street. I'm Trevor Hewitt for the Ryersonian this week.
I myself am super excited to go try out the warehouse here. I've been to the one on Queen Street, and as a student, you can't beat $5 meals and cheap margaritas.
That's so true, and I think it's impossible to find affordable food on campus sometimes. It's really going to help out. On Wednesday, the Ryersonian hosted a debate with the presidential candidates from all three slates running for the upcoming RSU elections. Miriam Valdez-Carletti, the moderator for the debate, joins us in studio today to tell us more. Thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
With all the posters around campus, it's no surprise that the RSU elections are underway. You facilitated the debate, and there were three main areas that you focused on: accessibility, finance, and social issues. What were some of the key issues they agreed upon?
There are actually a lot of key issues that they all agreed upon, and that would probably be the 24-hour workspace for students, getting the U Pass ready for students, which is basically transportation that would be a lot cheaper than the average Metro Pass, and transparency in finances, because a lot of times students will have issues with where money is going, that sort of stuff. So they all agreed upon, you know, making the finances better for students and how students could understand where their money is going, because we give them a lot of money each year, essentially. So they basically agreed on those three things. It's just a matter of how they would go about doing it, which was kind of different.
Suzanne Niaga had a really interesting point about this, didn't she?
Oh, yeah. She was talking about, for the 24-hour workspace, how security is kind of the main issue and why we can't have 24-hour workspace, just because there's not enough on campus.
I think the answer is simple. Hire more security. Let's get more security into these spaces. The RSU might be working with a $2.3 million budget, but Ryerson is working with billions of dollars. So let's talk about how they can put money towards hiring more security, how we can facilitate that conversation about security concerns, and how we're bringing in voices of marginalized groups that obviously have very different security concerns when it comes to how they're accessing space.
There's been a lot of issues in the past about how the RSU handles student finances. What were the candidates' plans for RSU finances?
So Matthew Smith, who's the presidential candidate for the Rhino Party, his main platform was getting finances online and having regular updates. So perhaps like per week or per month, but somehow that's like regular updates showing students of where the money is going. Ram Ganesh disagreed and said that while that's not really possible, how they would have a budget for the rest of the year within like the first 60 days in office and post it to the public. So the thing with finances is a lot of time referendums and voting will happen at the end of the year. And unfortunately, a lot of students who are eligible to vote, about 10,000 actually, are graduating, so it kind of doesn't really affect them. So what Matthew Smith was suggesting for transparency in referendums is to host them at the beginning of the year.
But I think it's important to have the students' voice included before any referendum happens, and since it's too late this year to even have that referendum, best time for that referendum is fall 2018, when the new students are at Ryerson, the old students are gone, and the people voting on it are the people who actually benefit from it, rather than the about 10,000 graduating students who might vote to increase the fee that they'll never have to pay.
So Ram Ganesh, basically his platform for like the whole financial transparency is that he's going to have like a full budget for the whole year, but have that within the first 60 days in office so that students can see where the money is going throughout the year. And for Suzanne, she said that, you know, transparency has been an issue in the past and that's something they're working on. So currently there is like a PDF online, but it's very hard to find. So I think for her, the main thing was trying just to make it more accessible for students, that they're able to find where their money is going and that sort of stuff. Because a lot of students know we pay money, but they don't know how much or where it's going. So for her, it's just more the transparency of where it's going, where Ram and Matthew just want it more visible, like online.
Okay, so they all seem to kind of agree on the same topic, that the RSU needs to be a little more transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And how serious should we be taking the Rhino Party?
So the Rhino Party in the past has always been kind of a joking party. They don't really have that many posters on campus, and then there's no faces to the party, essentially, just the Rhino logo. So in the past, they're all about transparency, and they kind of like diss the RSU a lot. But this year, I think it's a little bit different because they're actually taking themselves more seriously. And Matthew Smith actually showed up to our debate, because previously when other campus groups have held a debate, no one came for the Rhino Party. So they just assumed, okay, you know, it is a joke. But since he did show up this year and he actually had some good feedback and actual commentary, I think they are more serious this year and they are hoping to actually be voted. They don't have a full slate of like five members. Like they don't have a VP equity, they don't have a VP education. So I think they're slowly but surely getting there.
You said the reason they don't have these is because they think that the other candidates running in these categories are more than qualified for it. So they're not just running for the sake of running. They're only running if they have a purpose, right?
Yeah. So I think that's really important to point out, because they don't have a VP equity. And Matthew said it was because the other two slates running have a pretty good one and they couldn't find anyone better. So I think that does show that they're not really necessarily trying to like take over, but just work with the current members and just do their part.
And what are the key differences between the candidates?
there's a lot of differences. So as of right now, like Suzanne, she's the current RSU president, so she's already done a lot of work during the school year. So I think what she's trying to do is like continue the work that she's done in the rest of her slate. Ram Ganesh has been very heavily involved in student politics in the past. He was the campaign manager last year for the Spark Party. He's been on the Engineering Student Society, but he's never actually run for the RSU. And doing pre-interviews with him, he has some very strong feelings about the RSU, what he really doesn't like. So I think his purpose for joining the RSU would just to do change, and he's not really all for what they're doing right now. So with the key differences, while they do agree on some of the same issues, it's just how they go about doing those issues. So for example, the RSU currently wants to do like a multi-year budget plan, but Ram said that, you know, that's not feasible because every year the people in office are only there for 1 year and you can only do so much, so you can't really plan the stuff for the future. So for Matthew Smith, he's not afraid to say what he means. So for example, towards the end of the debate when it got kind of heated, he was kind of pointing out to Ram all the corrupt things that he's done in the past and that sort of stuff. Whereas Suzanne was very poised, you know, she just said her part. She didn't really do anything to tear other people down verbally, whereas like the other two members kind of were towards the end. So I think she was just kind of concentrating on herself and just what her platform stands for, whereas the other two men kind of were getting into each other.
Yeah, so I think in the coming week, we're definitely going to see maybe a lot more RSU drama. That's all the time we have. Thank you for coming in and giving us some important insights on the upcoming elections.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Polls are open from Tuesday to Thursday next week.
Last night, the RSC held a spoken word and performance night titled These Words of Mine. It was one of their many events set to take place during February to commemorate Black History Month. Rachel Aron has the story.
Black history, African history, African Canadian history. When we mention these things, what do they actually mean? For the Racialized Students Collective, all these terms coincide during the month of February. It's a time to celebrate the contributions the people of the Black diaspora have made to the world. RCS member Shaquille Buhi says, "These words of mine has taken place for the last 10 years because the arts are a special outlet for the Black community."
The Racialized Students Collective is really trying to make sure that we serve the greater community. It is a collective group of folks on and off campus, and we just really want to celebrate just Black art, so that's where we're starting from.
One of the most popular forms of art performed last night was spoken word.
The price of freedom wasted. I am here on behalf of your mother, whose unborn child, your brother, was viciously ripped from her womb as she tried to acquire freedom for you. I am here on behalf of your little brother, who was chained and beaten repeatedly for 4 days in an effort to have him forget his African name. I am here on behalf of your great
Spoken word is something that's powerful. This is like orally, this is how Black folks have been communicating for years. We really just want people just to come out and just like celebrate the community and celebrate the art that's happening.
While Black history is not limited to the arts, for one of last night's poets, Kareem Bennett, it neither should be limited to just 1 month.
Well, Black History Month is every day for me, to be honest. I can't relegate my history to a month. And I can't limit it to a month.
Bennett says it's become essential to celebrate his history every day because he was not afforded that opportunity when he was young.
As youth, we're not able to get text until we come to the educational system of university. Through, you know, high school and through elementary, we're already at a disadvantage because we don't have a sense of culture. I always feel a need to express it through my art form.
For young poet Dana Campbell, the arts are a way to reach more than just Black people.
Poetry, for me as a young Black woman, poetry is my way of being heard. It's the most eloquent at which I can organize my thoughts. It's the only time everyone can hear me, I feel like. People of all races and ages too, I notice. Like they'll be like, oh, I totally understand what you meant. Like it was relatable, because I try to make my poetry very cosmic, I'd say, not realistic, so that everyone can understand exactly what I'm talking about. It's less so about me and more so about us in the grand scheme.
Campbell wants to educate because she feels there's a general lack of knowledge.
I definitely don't feel as if the public is aware about what Black History Month really means to us and about the specificities of our, like, our history. Like, they're not fully aware. Because, like, I have a lot of friends who will always be like, oh, yeah, slavery. And I'm like, I don't think you understand the details. Like, they're thinking, like, people were beaten and enslaved and, like, not paid for their work. But you don't really understand the generational impact that that era and time had upon us to this day. So I don't think the general public is aware. And I can tell because they continue to spew ignorance on other issues that seem unrelated but are very much so directly related to our history.
The overall feeling seems to be that these young Black artists want their history to be celebrated appropriately, but they also want their own people to understand that Black is love and Black is beautiful. For Ryersonian This Week, I'm Rachel Arhin.
It was very exciting to go to that spoken word performance last night. There was great energy in the room. The RSC did a great job of putting it on, fed us very well too, so it was pretty nice to be there.
It sounds amazing, and I have to say, if any of the other events are like this, I definitely want to go check them out.
You should. So it's Friday, February 9th, and that's a wrap for our show today. Be sure to check us out anytime on ryersonian.ca and follow us on social media.
You can give us a listen by subscribing to Ryerson This Week on iTunes Podcast or Google Play. A big thanks to those who made this show happen, Angela Glover, Trevor Hewitt,
and our guests Kayla Paxo and Miriam Valdez Carletti. For Ryersonian This Week, I'm Rachel Arhin.
And I'm Sawyer Bogdan.
Stay blessed and don't be stressed. And thanks for listening.